Well, it's 5:45, and I'm going to start right on the money. The reason for that is you guys have something that you guys probably want to do at about 7 o'clock, I'm going to guess. The good news is you don't have to go running out here early. They're going to have them in this building, 8 and 33, so you'll be able to get your devices as quick as possible. Don't feel like you have to. Have to run out unless the session's really that bad, then it's excused. So for those of you who have not met me, and for those of you that have, I'm going to go over my spiel again. So my name is Keenan Newton. I'm a senior product manager on the SharePoint team. I'm responsible for the Office and SharePoint developer audiences. So while I'm even on the SharePoint team, I still care a lot about Office. And one of the reasons for that is, if you've been into the earlier sessions, you've noticed that there's a lot of similarities between this new Office and SharePoint cloud app model. There's a lot of synergy around that, and similarities and components that are shared between those two. In this session, we're actually going to go a little more deeper. We're going to talk more about apps for SharePoint. I'm going to actually create a cloud-hosted app. I'm not going to write it line by line because we'd be here until 8, and I know you don't want to be there. So what I did is I did take code snippets to make sure that I can do things fast. So I'll just copy-paste the code snippets out of Visual Studio. I'm sure you've seen and/or done that before in the past. But then I'll explain each snippet as I paste it in, so that way you can easily follow along. I'm going to do a little bit of we're going to talk a little bit about the app hosting models, and we will for SharePoint, and we'll focus on at the very end. We'll look at comparing kind of the REST calls and client-side object model calls, so that way you can make the best decisions for yourself on which ones you would actually want to use for writing apps for SharePoint. I do have to say that if you took a look at the syllabus, there was a co-presenter with me. E-Ray is unfortunately stuck in New York, kind of hunkering down due to the hurricane that's out there. So it's just me. So as I mentioned, the agenda that we're going to focus on is both for apps for app hosting options, and then looking at REST to client-side object model and APIs. So when it comes to hosting, there's basically three architectural approaches. The first one is the simplest when it comes to SharePoint, and we call this the SharePoint hosted app. And what this is, it's just basically an HTML page that's actually placed in SharePoint. With this new app model, the key thing to remember is that there is no code in any way, and when I say code, I mean like assemblies, binaries, C sharp, or whatever language of choice you have, that is being placed in SharePoint. Zero. None. It is all declarative, if anything you put into SharePoint. When you want code, this whole new app model, you run it somewhere else, like in Azure, IIS, or any hosting platform of your choice. What does this do? Well, I'll tell you a story. I used to be Microsoft Consulting Services, and I was working for a very, very large financial institution. It was about 4 in the morning, and we just pushed out a SharePoint full of farm trust solution, full trust, and it was actually a really simple little thing. Went ahead and fired it up, tested to make sure it worked. 3 minutes later, the entire farm went down. All of it. All this very large financial institution. The good thing is, it was done at 4 in the morning on the East Coast, so no one noticed. I was able to retract my changes. So don't tell anybody. But the key thing I want to note is that I was able, just with one small mistake with a do while loop, I was able to take down an entire farm. Just one simple little mistake. Now, if you had a loosely coupled model where your code's running outside of SharePoint, well, you mess up the app, but you don't mess up SharePoint. And that's kind of one of the key things. It isn't just so much to even protect customers for your on-premise installations. We also have this thing now called Office 365 that's important for us to make sure that we keep it up and running like 99.99% of the time or whatever. I don't remember what our SLAs are off the top of my head. The idea is that we don't want someone's code to take it down. So from going from SharePoint 2010 to SharePoint 2013, we had to come up with a way of saying, hey, how can we build solutions that are both available in the cloud and on-prem, and you have the full capabilities of what you could pretty much do in a full trust solution, but still not take down the full trust environment. And that's where this cloud app model comes from. So with the SharePoint hosted app, there's no code. No code, just HTML and JavaScript. And that's what your app points to. We talked about earlier about the manifest file, and the SharePoint has its own manifest file, and that URL will just simply go ahead and point to wherever that where the app is located. And when you deploy the app, you just deploy those artifacts into directly into SharePoint. The next two sets of architecture approaches fall under the cloud-hosted apps model. And this is where we're executing things off-box, off the server itself. Somewhere in the cloud, somewhere within your organization, doesn't matter. The idea is that it's running off server. I mean, technically you could put it locally on the same machine, but the idea is to run it off server. So the first one is the provider-hosted model. And what this means is that the provider of the app or whoever's hosting the app provides the hosting environment, whether that's IIS with ASP.NET, Azure, Windows Azure Web Sites. The choice is completely up to you and what you want to decide to do. You can even use a non-Microsoft platform if you want to. Not that I'm suggesting it, but I'm just saying if you have that type of situation within your organization where they kind of favor using other platforms, there's nothing stopping you from really doing so. I will say this, though. Running on the Microsoft stack will obviously be a first-class experience with the tooling and everything else with deploying solutions. So that's something to definitely consider. The second one is called the auto-hosted app. And what this one does, this one actually automatically deploys the app for you. So if you have SQL, like tables being stored in SQL, store procedures, it'll deploy that into SQL Azure for you. If you have code, binaries, it'll actually deploy that to Windows Azure websites for you automatically. And with every Office 365 tenant, you're allocated so many apps and then so much compute associated with it. If you want to go beyond that specific number, you can go ahead and purchase more if you want, if you decide to do so. The great thing about this is that you can provide full, robust apps, send them to the marketplace, and someone, a user, can just basically say, hey, I want this app. They have the right permissions to go ahead and install the app, and they just click on install, and it provisions everything automatically for them. Now, I said this was Office 365, which is true. That's where we first have it, and we'll be looking to move it to on-prem as well, so you'll be able to do it in either environment. But the idea is that, you know, assuming you have Windows Azure website set up, you have SQL, in case of on-prem, like SQL 2012 set up, all they have to do is just install the app, and that's it. It provisions everything automatically for you. So these are the two main models. Now, one key thing I want to remember, the SharePoint hosted app, while we consider that a separate architectural approach, that ability to put in content into SharePoint is still allowed with the cloud-based apps. So those cloud hosted apps, you can have like lists and document libraries and HTML pages and JavaScript loaded directly into that SharePoint app as well. So let's do a quick comparison between the differences you get with a SharePoint hosted app versus a cloud hosted app. So first, we'll look at like the app scope itself. So with a SharePoint site, SharePoint hosted, it's basically focused towards the SharePoint site. You really can't get beyond the SharePoint site and the parent site itself. You can't like look throughout the entire site collection and whatnot. From a cloud hosted capabilities, it can be based at both the site level and at the tenancy level. That's where you can scope your app at. So you have the options there. Architecturally, SharePoint hosted, well, everything's sitting within the app web itself, right? Where the SharePoint app is sitting. So everything's about that website and only about that website. The cloud hosted model, well, you can support multi-tenancy. So you can support multiple site collections, multiple locations. You can do it to your heart's content. Key thing is, though, when you support multi-tenancy, you have to build the app itself to support multi-tenancy. That doesn't come for free. So if you have, Contoso and then another company over here, you have to make sure that their data isn't being intermixed. So you have to manage that multi-tenancy yourself. Developer skill set, knowing a little bit about SharePoint, basically the SharePoint artifacts or the client-side object model, and knowing HTML JavaScript for the SharePoint host side. That's all they pretty much need to know. From a cloud-hosted side, you need to know the entire full stack. So if you're doing server-side code on whatever platform, you need to understand what that is. UI technologies, again, with the SharePoint side, it's mostly focused on HTML JavaScript. For those of you who are new fans of TypeScript, which I'm one of them, you can go ahead and leverage that too. Right now, the TypeScript, the compiler, isn't part of the Visual Studio packaging for Office and SharePoint. However, it's like three lines to edit the proj file and insert it, and it just works. For the cloud hosted, you can pick any UI technologies that you want to use. So you can technically build cloud hosted apps that may have like a Windows Phone 8 front end, may have a Windows 8 front end, and kind of treat SharePoint more as a service to your application itself. Server code on a SharePoint hosted, as I said, no server code. Server code is bad in this new world. Now, granted, if you're doing full trust solutions for on-prem, you can totally keep doing those. I mean, the investments that you made are still all there. That's not going away anytime too soon. Just with this app model, this is just a new tool that you can leverage. And you, with the SharePoint hosted app, you can't write any code to the server. Cloud hosted, you can write whatever you want. When it comes to storage, cloud hosted, you can pick whatever you want. In storage, you're pretty much stuck with what SharePoint has to offer, which is lists and document libraries and those other content types. Key limitations, if I haven't pounded into you enough yet, is on the SharePoint hosted side, no server code. That's the key thing. And the cloud hosted side, you have to have some experience dealing with multi-tenancy and being able to manage that. So when so how do you choose between one over the other? So cloud hosted apps, it's pretty much preferred probably for most of your situations that you're going to go after. If you're doing something small or you have very small resources being leveraged, like a little widget kind of thing, you could probably get away with a SharePoint hosted app. Now, even with a SharePoint hosted app, you can use things like JSONP and SharePoint. The server has a proxy ability, so you can actually proxy to a separate service that's not within your domain itself. So you can do cross-domain calls via the proxy. So you can get other services. But again, SharePoint hosted, really probably better for the smaller type of apps. With cloud apps, it's really about, you get the full power of the web. May require your own hosting, depending if you're doing provider or auto-hosted. And you have to deal with multi-tenancy permission management issues. If you don't want to deal with those, SharePoint hosted side is, it's SharePoint-based. There's no server-side code. And it's automatically hosted in SharePoint, so you automatically have a site to actually host your app. You don't have to figure out, where am I going to host my app at? And just by the nature of it being within the app itself, it's inherently multi-tenancy safe. So it's automatically isolated, won't affect any of the other installs themselves. So hopefully you kind of get an idea of when do I use a SharePoint hosted app versus when do I look at a cloud hosted app. So let's actually go ahead and take a look at a cloud hosted app, because SharePoint hosted is just kind of, fun JavaScript. I figured it'd be a little more fun to actually have an actual something that you can actually leverage. So right here, I have I went ahead and started up a new Visual Studio app for SharePoint project. And if I want to do that, I just simply go File, New, Project, click Apps, and within the SharePoint apps, I'd click OK. And then right here, the key thing is to remember is that where's the site, the URL at the top, the middle here, defines where I'm actually going to have the site. You can't create a project without having a site associated with it. And the hosting option. So whether you're going to do auto-hosted, provider-hosted, or SharePoint-hosted, you can choose that now. That way it'll build out the Visual Studio projects in an intelligent way. So we'll just cancel that since we already have that. Okay. So now that I went ahead and that we went through and created a new web project, we can go ahead and automatically add some code in here. So we'll start with the HTML form that we'll create. And I'm just using some ASPX, like Script Manager and Content Update, to go ahead and simplify what some of the Ajax-like calls that I'm going to go ahead and make. I'm going to go ahead and insert a table. And what this app is going to do is it's basically just going to iterate over my site collection and just kind of tell me some information about it. Like it's going to tell me what content I have, who the user is that's logged in, which is me, and the name of the site. It's not anything particularly too cool, but it's just to kind of get an idea of how the different components would work together. So here I just have my HTML where I'm just going to have like what's the name of the title, who the current user is, list of users associated with it, and a list of the lists that are available to me. Now if we go into the ASPX page itself, I can go ahead and I'll just replace the whole ASPX page with what I have here. So I'll just delete that. Put that in here. Okay, so now I have the entire page for the CS file, for the default page that's going to render my app. And a key couple things that I'm going to have here that I want to show off is that I have this class here called Token Helper. Now, Token Helper is actually automatically generated for me by Visual Studio. And one of the things that you have to remember with cloud-hosted apps, you have to authenticate the app with SharePoint. And in doing so, we support OAuth. Well, one of the great things that we did is that with the Visual Studio Project, we actually created all that goo automatically for you, so you don't have to do it yourself. So automatically, when I go ahead and install this Visual Studio Project, it creates this Token Helper class for me and writes all fun lines of 1,188 lines of code that you wouldn't normally have to do yourself. And the idea is that it handles all the negotiation for getting the OAuth tokens and everything else that's associated with it. You don't have to deal with that. It's all provided for you. If you want to customize this, you can definitely go ahead and do so on your own. So once I go ahead and grab my token, I get my context token, I'll get my SharePoint URL itself, and then the access token will be sent to the command argument of the for the client-side object model call. And that pretty much sums up what's there. Now I'll go ahead and add my click event for the client-side object model, so this will just go ahead and populate the click event itself. And in this right here, the only thing I'm doing is I'm going to pass the command access token to a method called retrieve CSOM. And we're going to use the client-side object model to go ahead and iterate over all these various components and render the page with the information about the site collection. Right here, I have this page that I already created called CSOM.cs. And in here, basically, what it does is it just goes ahead and pulls back the context itself, calls using with the token helper, pulls back the client context itself, and then performs the various queries for getting the current user, the list of web objects, the list of current users, and sets them into the collections that I had created over here at the top, which I had declared right here. So this list of users and a list of lists, and then I just do the data binding here. So assuming I didn't forget to do anything, if I hit start, what will happen now, the app package is going to get packaged up for me automatically, and it's going to start the process of installing it on the app into SharePoint itself. And it usually takes about roughly 10, 15, maybe 20 seconds or so. So just out of curiosity, how many people have actually started from these last two sessions actually tried creating their own developer tenant? Anybody try that yet? We have one person. So creating a developer tenant, if you want to try like a trial, you can do that for free. You can just go in there and go ahead and try a new trial, and that comes for free. Now, right now I'm using Office 365, and I know our network's just been a little bit sluggish. So just bear with me here in a few seconds. Nope, the app's successfully deployed. And I just have to log in to my tenancy. And now this is a key thing that pops up. It asks me, do I want to trust this app? Because I'm reading things outside of the app itself, I'm reading into the site collection, I have to specify those permissions and how I do that. And I'll show you in a second how that's done. But as the end user who's installing the app, I now have the choice of whether to trust the app or not. This is kind of similar to the Windows Phone device or pretty much any type of mobile device when installing apps. Like, hey, do you want this app to read your location services or your contact list? And you select yes or no. So we'll just go ahead and trust it. And as you can see here, I have a simple HTML page to say populate data. And I click on populate data. It renders the information automatically for me. Again, this is if you take a look here, this is not running within SharePoint. You can see it's running in localhost. So this code is totally running outside of SharePoint. It's running localhost. It's calling using the CSOM to actually call the SharePoint web services to return the data. So now that we've seen that, but that's great. But when you leave an application like this, you know, it's sometimes kind of hard to know where you came from. You don't want the user to have to hit the back button to get back into their SharePoint environment. So how do you get back into the actual SharePoint environment itself? Well, we actually include something called the Chrome control, which basically provides CSS and Chrome capabilities to your apps for SharePoint automatically. And what I'll do is I'll go back to the web page here, and I will add the JavaScript that is required for the Chrome control, which is this right here. Now, this Chrome control, what I do is I, since I'll be using jQuery, make sure that I set up the reference to the jQuery script from the CDN. And I use jQuery when document on ready, when it's ready to go ahead and execute the necessary code to go ahead and grab the render call. So it's going to pull back it's going to get the host URL, the web host here, and we'll add in the host web URL where this file of spuicontrols.js resides. This is where the Chrome's control is, and there's actually other SharePoint controls that are here as well. Once it grabs this script and it's specifically it's downloaded, it'll then go ahead and fire Render Chrome. Now, on Render Chrome, basically what we do is we specify a set of options using a JSON with OData, and we'll go ahead and specify what the site icon is going to be. We'll specify the title of what you're going to see. There's like a help page, and then we'll set up any settings links that will be made available. So here we have one for the account HTML, one for the contact. Once we have that specified, then we go ahead and define the control itself, where the placeholder is, and then we just say make it visible. Now the only thing we have to do now is we just have to put in the placeholder where it's going to reside. So we'll just go ahead and place that in, and we're done. So now if I go ahead and execute this app and hit F5, it uninstalls the app automatically for me, starts running the app itself. Let's quickly log in to my tenancy. And if all goes well, I now have a Chrome control, which gives me that SharePoint type of experience that we would expect from our app. Again, I'm within my local host itself. That's right here. I can I have the ability to go into like settings, just like in the SharePoint 2013 environment, as well as getting to help information itself. I was able to inject an app icon here, and you notice that the look and feel has kind of changed a little bit, and it looks more kind of like a SharePoint site because I'm bringing in that CSS as well. Now, if I want to go back to my site, I simply just go click on this right here, and it takes me back to my SharePoint site itself. So this way, I have that experience where I have my SharePoint site, I go to my app, I click on my app itself, here's the experience that the users get, and then I can easily go back. Again, by using this Chrome control, I get people like the experience that they're inside SharePoint, that your app is still inside SharePoint, even though it's being hosted somewhere else. So let's go ahead and jump back to the deck. And now that we've seen a little bit what a cloud-hosted hosted app is like, let's talk a little bit about the REST and CSOM components. So there's some changes from 2010 to 2013. The client.cvs service, and actually there were some other services added as well, have extended the REST capabilities. In 2010, you pretty much just had the ability to make REST calls to a list. Now there's over 30,000 different classes between the CSOM and REST endpoints, and over 100,000 different calls that you can make via CSOM methods or REST endpoints specifically, whether it's like get, post, put, delete, or whatever that may be. So there's a lot of capabilities that we've added both on the CSOM and REST side of the things. We use OData protocol, so that way it's using standard web standards, so you can use this with other apps or solutions that support OData. With the client-side object model, we've extended those APIs, again, as I mentioned before, but you can also use them with Windows Phone applications as well, because they're the when we designed it, we used it so it can be a generic assembly that could be used with anything that can run .NET, whether it's Silverlight, Windows Phone, Windows 8, Azure, whatever it may be. So what's covered in the new CSOM REST APIs? Everything. Search, social, taxonomy, workflow, analytics, BCS, IRM, e-discovery, publishing, sharing, and just lots more. I mean, everything that was there is still there, and then we've added so much more to the CSOM REST APIs. And future versions are going to be adding more and more capabilities as well. Because we definitely see this cloud app model as being definitely one of the tool sets that's going to be used by a lot of individuals in the future. So just a quick look at changes by SKU itself. So from the foundation SKU, there haven't been really any significant changes to the CSOM REST APIs, apart from the support for REST APIs as well. So you still have the client .dll and runtime.dll. The primary investment has been focused around adding REST support to the existing APIs for Foundation, so we didn't really do a whole lot there. From a SharePoint server standpoint, we have new APIs that support both for CSOM and REST that support document management, publishing, taxonomy. There's a few other assemblies in there for around search, user profiles. There's just a ton of stuff that we've put out there. And a couple of the key things, if you've known the user profile service, ever tried to leverage it in the past, we've kind of rewritten that a little bit, hence why we have a new user profiles assembly to support the client-side object model and REST APIs as well. So how does this whole architecture kind of fit together? Well, first thing is, if you remember the underscore VTI underscore bin for the SharePoint developers out there, that's still there, but we're abstracting that away. The new thing we want you to start writing your REST API calls is to underscore API, something simpler and just easier to remember. When it comes to client-side code, you have the options, right? You can use for the working with the Microsoft stack. You can use the client-side object model, whether it's the .NET CLR libraries, using it within Silverlight, like on the phone, or you can use the JavaScript libraries itself, whether you're using a web-based type of application or even like Windows 8 as well. And then your custom client code, whatever platform you want to write that, you can go ahead and do so. Or you can not use the client-side object model. You can go ahead and use REST and OData and use return data back as JSON from OData. In this case, you can actually go outside of the Microsoft platform of technologies for writing your apps, and you can support whatever platform or use whatever platform that you choose to do so. So you have a lot of flexibility in how you build these app models going forward. So why is REST so important? First and foremost, the industry momentum. You know, I will say that one thing I definitely appreciate that we've been doing as a company is we've been following more and more what the industry is doing. And if we see something that we can kind of get behind, like REST, we're definitely all in making that happen. And with REST being kind of like pretty much the prominent way of doing API calls right now to different services, that's definitely something that we wanted to get our arms around. Second, it's kind of simple and easy to use. Anybody ever tried using a SOAP web service from HTML? Yeah, it's good luck. It's doable. I've seen people do it, but I don't encourage it. It's one of those things that it just is not very friendly. You get greater productivity with it using JavaScript and jQuery and the other frameworks that are out there, like Knockout.js and whatever JavaScript type of technologies that you want to use, even TypeScript. You hit the ground running a lot faster using REST. You can choose the format that you want things in, whether it be in JSON or ATOM. I mean, that's just simply a switching the a parameter in the string of what you want to come back. Most importantly, they're easy to test. You don't need to use Visual Studio to write REST API calls. You can test your things and debug them using good old-fashioned web browser. You just simply put your query in there, then the results will come back. You can right-click View Source on the page, or depending on the other browser you use, sometimes it shows up. And probably one of the most important things, it's platform agnostic. And we really, you know, the Office and SharePoint teams are really, really embracing that when it comes to server-side solutions. There's a lot of good stuff that's already out there that you shouldn't have to go ahead and reinvent the wheel for in order to support the Office and SharePoint platforms. So by supporting REST, we make sure that, hey, whatever platform your stuff is running on, it's going to work just as well with Office and SharePoint. So each query is submitted with a unique URL. So this way, results can be cached by various proxy servers. So that's one key thing if you with SharePoint, that we actually cache the actual calls that come back. So if you want to kind of fool it, you have to do that. Was it on non? I believe it's like nonsense identifier at the end for those who are very familiar with web technologies, where it's just like a random code based on the date and time in order to force a refresh. Otherwise, we cache the data for you. We're using the App Fabric cache underneath the hood to make that happen for you automatically. So that way, once you make a query or a call, it's still there, and you still have all the goodness that you were looking forward to. So some key things that for you guys that are doing new 2013 type of solutions. The client-side object model URLs, the calls themselves, are actually going through the new APIs folder. So one of the things that you can do is you can remove all your references if you're going to be upgrading an application from 2010 to 2013. You don't have to, but we suggest that you do just because it's for simplicity reasons. Use the new underscore API URL that's there. Otherwise, everything is pretty consistent between using the old underscore VTI bin client.service. Again, just it saves. I mean, if you care about bandwidth, it just saves a little bit on bandwidth as well. So, hey, there are organizations that care about 10 characters in the query string. Let me tell you, they do exist. So mapping of objects. So one of the things we did is we try to make sense with these REST APIs. So when you're pulling back a list, you know that I'm going to my web. Okay, great. So my website of different lists, I can go ahead and call lists, and I'm going to get a complete list of all the lists I have available to me. If I go ahead and put a whack get by title, well, I'm not going to get lists by that specific title. If I want to see for the web itself, I want to be able to get the available web template. I'm going to go ahead and use underscore API whack web. The idea is that the naming conventions is kind of similar to like a namespace with .NET and classes. So there's a consistency there. And we want to make sure that's the way it's easy to kind of discover what REST URLs are available to you. So let's go ahead and do a little quick comparison between the client-side object model and REST. So we're going to go back to that demo that we had. And if you remember, we called the client-side object model stuff, but now we're going ahead and we're going to add REST to it. And then what we'll do is right before I execute it, we'll compare what those calls, the differences between those calls look like. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to replace my HTML table here with a new improved one. And then this one basically is just going to allow me to render the CSOM and REST side by side. And then next, I'm going to go ahead and go back to my where I actually get my CSOM data from the click that I made, and we're going to add the REST in there as well. So now I'm going to call method call rest with retrieve with rest. And then lastly, I'm going to go ahead and include the REST API in this project. Now let's do a little side-by-side comparison of what that looks like. So we'll go ahead and set up a vertical split here. And let's just go ahead and take a look at what the differences are. I'll just move this off to the side. That one off to the side. So one thing that you'll notice, first of all, using the client-side object model, I will fully admit, will probably save you in the long run lines of code. You can see it only took 61 lines to do the same kind of thing as it's going to take to do 102 lines of the, with REST. And just so you know, REST is on the left and CSOM is on the right. So a couple things that you have to do with the client-side object model that does it for you automatically. You don't have to worry about like adding namespaces to pull back the data back. And making the call itself in CSOM is about three lines. And in here, you pretty much have to do all this fun stuff here where you pull back, set up an HTTP web request, and so on. Now, you can find frameworks that are out there that actually make this a lot simpler to use, such as like REST Sharp, and that actually kind of simplify the amount of code. So here I'm just kind of showing the raw .NET code that's involved, but you can go ahead and leverage those frameworks that actually would make it probably comparable to CSOM as well. So here with the REST API, I'm just going to use a method of get. I'm going to return it as Atom XML, and I'm going to send it the authorization token itself. Once I get the response back, I'm going ahead and read the stream and then start populating, you know, the title, start populating the other aspects as well. And pretty much it's the same call for, you know, getting the list of users and the lists as well. Over here, those calls are just done about three lines of code. So there are definitely advantages using the client-side object model. People ask me between the REST and client-side object model, is there parity between the two? And it's pretty close. I think there's probably a few more client-side object model capabilities that are not available via REST. And when we looked at coverage for the client-side object model and REST, we've got maybe about 80% of everything that you can do in a farm solution today, maybe 70%. And the things that we left out were more about the administrative things, like dealing things with the central admin and things like that. Things that you probably wouldn't really write in an app that you would just want an end user to use anyways. So with that, let's just take a quick look and just show them running the results coming back side to side. As you'll be able to see that it's pretty much the exact same thing either way you look at it. So we'll just go ahead and populate the data. So my CSOM on the left and my REST on the right, and I can get back the exact same type of results using both the client-side object model and using REST. So I have complete choice in how I actually want to make these remote type of calls, depending just how much lines of code that you want to write and basically your own development practices that you use internally within your organization, like the platforms you use, if you use different frameworks like REST Sharp or jQuery, things of that nature. So some more things I want to show you within this project. One of the things I mentioned was the app manifest file. Now, if you notice the Office one, that there's also one for SharePoint as well. And we have a graphical interface for managing this. So with this, I define the query string itself. And I can specify other parameters that get sent. So when I click on my app, that these parameters actually get sent to get sent to my app itself. I define where the start page is. So again, it could be any ASPX page. The URL itself is actually defined when you actually build the actual app. If I have an icon, I can go ahead and insert what the icon is. So defining permissions for the app itself, I can go ahead and define various types of permissions here. So I can say, hey, I want access to the site collection, and then I can define the permission self and specify full control. And then that's where that prompt comes up automatically for me saying, hey, do you want full control for this app? I can say yes or no. Also, I can define any prerequisites that may be necessary. So other technologies that need to be available in SharePoint, such as Access or Duet or PowerPoint services, things that my app might actually leverage, I can define those. And the store will have enough sense to say, hey, you don't have this. You probably don't want to purchase and install this app. So the store actually knows what services that you have available to you. Supported locales, which is pretty self-explanatory. You can support different languages. So if you have different resource files associated with your apps, you can go ahead and package those up together and send them. So if they have a different language, they can see things in their language of choice. And lastly, I talked a little bit about this, is the remote endpoints. And what this does is this gives you the ability to define endpoints that can be used through a proxy. So this way you can make calls via the SharePoint web proxy into other JavaScript APIs and libraries themselves. And that's pretty much it for this part of the demo right here. So you can kind of get an idea of all the different components that are available to you. So let's go ahead and I'll talk a little bit about our related sessions that we have. Tomorrow is Apps for Office and SharePoint Development that's using Visual Studio. So they're going to go in depth into using Visual Studio. Obviously, I just kind of showed the basics here. But in this case, you'll be able to go into much further depth, both with NAPA and Visual Studio. On Thursday, we're going to actually show how to build an end-to-end solution. So you're going to have a SharePoint solution that's going to be built from end to end. And you're going to see all the great pieces that are involved in doing so. And lastly, we're going to have another session on developing an app for SharePoint that's auto-hosted. So you can kind of get an idea of what that experience is like if that's something that you choose to do. With that, I'm going to go ahead and take some questions. So because I wanted to finish up just a few minutes early, that's why I started directly on time, to make sure that you guys can get in line at reasonable time. So yes. So the question is, for developing apps for Office and SharePoint, do I need to have SharePoint local on my host? And the answer is absolutely not. They're coming soon. So the question is, are there any RTM SDKs coming? And they're coming soon. What you actually saw here was me using RTM bits. They're being packaged and probably will be out within the next 2 or 3 weeks. The preview SDKs will work with the RTM release. Some of the things that we discovered while upgrading our beta 2 demos to RTM is that you will want to download, you will want to uninstall all the preview bits. You want to install the RTM Visual Studio tooling, then recompile your app. And especially around workflow, we found that there were some issues with workflow there. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, sir. So the question is that with SharePoint development, you had to use like ASP.NET page forms? When you're using the SDK, so you can use ASP.NET MVC. You can use MVVM or any framework you want. There's not a project template for it, but if you go to the end-to-end solution that Donovan's doing on Thursday, 8:30 morning, he actually shows how to do that with ASP.NET MVC. And he'll actually go into great depth into OAuth as well. So everything you want to know about OAuth, that's the session to go to. Yes, sir. What are the proxy capabilities so your app can look like it's hosted by SharePoint? When you create a SharePoint host app, that's done for you automatically, but we actually prohibit that from happening because we want to make sure we have complete isolation of your app from SharePoint itself. Well, that was the SharePoint Chrome control I was using, right? Right, but what you're saying is you're not. What it's not. No, you can't do that. We intentionally do that. I mean, for the URL, because again, we want to ensure complete 100% isolation of your app from SharePoint, and that's intentionally done by design. Absolutely. Thank you very much, sir. Long time no see. Any other questions? Yes?
I thought you mentioned that REST calls return JSON, which
is
XML.
Yeah, you can return JSON or Atom because it supports OData. So whatever OData supports both Atom, which is like XML, RSS type, feed type format, or JSON. So it can do either or. When you're using JavaScript, obviously it's probably a lot easier to use JSON, right? Any other questions? No, with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Get in line, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.